You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On the 12th of August, Mandy Hager released her new book about Aotearoa's history of protest. Titled Protest, Shaping Aotearoa, it focuses on notable social justice, human rights and environmental movements from our history. This includes parihaka, employment strikes, women's suffrage and conscientious objection. Louis spoke to the author, Mandy Hager, about the book, how the protest has shaped Aotearoa today, and the similarities between different movements. To start, Louis asked Mandy to explain what the book was about for those who have not seen it.
So it's looking at different protests that have taken place, starting with Honaheke and chopping down the British flag, right through to... the very latest climate protests going on, the student climate protests, and kind of broken into land protests, employment protests, gender and disability rights, peace issues, racism, protecting the environment and climate action. And then at the end, there's some examples from protests in different Pacific countries, so Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga and Kiribati.
Obviously, I guess these protests have taken place over a long time with lots of different circumstances, similarities and parallels that you can draw between each movement.
Yeah, I thought about that quite a lot. One of the really interesting things is that a lot of them were started or led by young people, which I think is really interesting and cool. Once they have become involved in actions, tend to stay active and stay politically engaged. Also, just this thing of ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and that it can start with one person, but once a movement gets rolling, a lot of these protests have made really amazingly positive contributions to the country and things that have really improved the rights of people all over the place. So I've only chosen ones that I actually see as having made a positive difference for the country. Of course, you know, there are all sorts of protests for all sorts of reasons, but I focused on social justice, environment and human rights. So I kind of think that all those people were heroes in a way that have done those things. Incredibly brave, from, you know, risking their lives or some of them dying through to tying themselves to railway tracks and all sorts of things.
How come social justice, human rights and the environment were the three subcategories that you chose?
Because to me, they're the ones that have most benefited every person in the country. So I've looked at the ones that have really made a difference to the most people, and they kind of build. So for instance, if you take something like women's vote, that once women got the vote, then the next campaign had to be to actually get women into parliament. And then once women were in parliament, to actually start advocating for laws that would benefit women, like, you know, being able to get a divorce and being supported. And that then leads on to gay rights, which also supported disability rights. So it's kind of like a continuum that once you start trying to improve people's rights, when you've got that one kind of ticked off, then you move on to the next one.
The similarities between different movements, I guess that's something I found quite interesting. And obviously there's links between, you mentioned, a suffragette and then later disability movements and everything in between. But for things that occurred, I guess, similar time periods, are there similarities between them? So things like the land reform and then suffragette.
Yeah. Well, I think that we had this amazing example very early on with parihaka of non-violent resistance, which actually was then used as a model for people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King. I think that that is something that we have in common. We have had, you know, violent resistance, particularly around the employment issues like the Waihi miners' strike and the 1951 waterfront dispute and the Springbok tour. So we have had times where it has kind of fallen to pieces and turned to violence. But overall, most of our protest has been pretty creative, actually.
Obviously, we're talking a little bit about culture now. but not so much about, I guess, the actual results of the protest, which are somewhat more obvious. But how has Aotearoa's history of protest shaped our culture and shaped what we see in civil society today?
Well, because I think it's challenged things. If you take something like the Springbok Tour, some of the groups in there, like Ngā Tamatoa and Accord and groups around the Dawn Raids, they all said, you know, we're protesting this stuff that's overseas, but it's time that we turned around and looked at ourselves. Although that was what the Springbok Tour was about, it actually started people thinking about the fact that there was a lot of racism going on here. So sometimes, you know, looking into an issue deeply reflects back the things that we need to change, I think. So it becomes a very kind of forward-looking process, but you start fighting one thing, but then you see, well, we've done this, we now need to move on to the next one. So it is a real continuum.
For you researching this book, were there any things you found in the process that were somewhat surprising? Or
lots and lots of little things, because particularly with the protests that I've personally been involved in over the years, the level of surveillance that went on is one of the things that really shocked me. In the way that the government lied at times, local bodies too, changed laws and bylaws in order to support business that worked against ordinary people's interests. Overall, the main thing I personally got out of it was a real sense of hope, to be honest. I started writing it during the last lockdown, and I was feeling quite glum about the world and thinking about, you know, climate change. But actually looking at the history and seeing the amount of times that protest actually did make change, I found really cheering and really kind of hopeful for the young people who are now having to face climate change.
Yeah, and that's something, the present day protests, that's something I wanted to touch on. How, I guess, do these protests of Aotearoa's past relate to present movements such as Putaki Bay and climate strike?
A, because I think we have that history of non-violent resistance, so we can use that as a roadmap. So we can look at what other people have done and build on those strategies and see that there are all sorts of different strategies that people have used, you know, from people dressing up and making big puppets and doing kind of creative things through to Polynesian Panthers going and doing dawn raids on politicians to show them what it felt like. So I think that protesters today can see that there are a range of ways that you can make your voices heard and make a difference that don't require turning to violence.
Because the book is obviously targeted towards young adults. For them, I guess, when things aren't going right, when protests feel like they're not moving forward, why is it important to look back on what we've done and to understand our history in terms of protest?
I think so that you don't feel powerless. Young people today are facing a cataclysmic emergency of the climate, and it is really, really easy to feel hopeless. And so I think any way that they can see that change can be made, and that you know, protest can be a noble act, because protesters often get really badly labelled, you know, for what they're doing. But that gives them the encouragement to keep going, and I think they really need that.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.